Hi, this is Josh with the Inside Selling Podcast, a podcast about selling without selling your soul. Part two of the series, Persistence. When is too much? Back on the program for part two is Jessica Watts, the VP of Sales for Jellyvision. Hey, Jessica.
Hey. I think it's kind of hilarious that we have a part two to Persistence. Like, we should just keep going, like, all the way to, like, part 12.
How many parts is too much parts on a podcast? That would be another...
Are we annoying yet?
We're probably annoying. All right, so let's talk about the problem. The problem is, I had a conversation with a prospect, and as a salesperson, I thought that I could help them do something better. The prospect seemed to be engaged, and then when I tried to reach out to that prospect again, they went dark. I know this has never happened to any salesperson ever, and the question that I get often is, how many times should I follow up? What should I be doing? Because as we talked about earlier, there's this, like, this arc of persistence, if you think about it, like an arc. And there is persistence and value to persistence. And then it gets over this hump where you're just effing annoying. And so we don't want to get over that hump. But yet we need closure as a rep, because we know we have people like Jessica breathing down your throat if you're an AE, these VPs of sales. And so what do we do? So Jessica... Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the cause of this first, before we delve into tactics. What is causing prospects to go dark?
Oh man, it could be any myriad of reasons, really. I mean, I think the very first thing that I like to lead with is, I like to think that prospects have decent intent, right? That if you had a great conversation with them where there was mutuality in understanding the application of your tool and the value, they're living the same day as you or me, and things come up and things get busy, and genuinely they are bootstrapped. And then I think there's kind of part two, where a rep is assuming they heard something that they didn't hear, they completely misdiagnosed, and now they're prescribing a fantasy onto an opportunity that's either unqualified or just not the right time. I mean, there could be a lot of things, a lot of reasons. So I think, again, two buckets. Either you've misqualified and you got like a crazy case of happy ears, or, you know, you have to have a little bit of patience and understanding for how businesses work and how busy people can be.
Totally. I think you make a great point. And I guess step one of this, as we talk about the cause, is we go into these meetings with the wrong intent. Mm-hmm. Intent in sales is so important. When you're on these meetings and you go in with a assumptive attitude that this person needs what it is that I'm selling, you start to get into this mindset of the chase.
And so, or that you're even selling, right? I mean, I think you could start there. If you approach every interaction like it is the sell, you're already off to a terrible start. You're never going to build the trust necessary to do the discovery that's going to put you in a position to be helpful. And I just don't think that you're going to find what you're looking for.
Totally right. The mindset here is to just get to the truth. And the truth might be that there's not a fit. The truth might be that they want to continue the conversation with you. So there's really two endpoints. Would I like to keep talking to you, or do I not want to keep talking to you at this time? And we're going to give you some phraseology and some tactics on here on how to get to that. But I think it starts with intent, and the intent being not to be assumptive.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes we get into these discovery questions where, to your point, we get these happy ears and it puts us in a chase. We're kind of doomed from the start. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about that. You know, let's talk about some preventative measures so we don't have to get into this following up and following up and following up. What are some of the things we can do on a discovery call that can, not practically, I'm not going to say, you know, pie in the sky, we're never going to eliminate it, it's going to happen, but how can we prevent or reduce the number of people that we start to chase in the discovery call? What are some things that you've seen, Jessica?
Yeah, I think look at the questions that you ask and ask who you're asking them for. I think a lot of reps, I hear it all of the time, they go into like product fit qualifiers And I'm just like, what are we even doing talking about, you know, if they're a fit for the product? We have no idea. We haven't even worked for a moment to understand the ecosystem of this organization or what they might be struggling with, or, you know, what their strategy is in the next 3 to 6 months. And I think, I don't know about you, I procure technology. I'm sick of starting calls like that. And I think if you can do anything different right now, you know, maybe start. I mean, this is a very, very challenger kind of way to think about it, but start by teaching them something before you ask anything.
Yes, I love that.
Start by earning your time.
So the idea here is to ditch the pitch, mm-hmm. and obviously to diagnose before you prescribe. And so one of the ways that I like to do that, and we can get a little tactical here, because I know people are like, well, what does that mean? What kind of questions can I ask? If you are showing a demo within 5 or 10 minutes, or you're going through slides, ditch that. Instead, what we want to, because here's the thing, people buy for their reasons, not yours. So we have to understand what the motivation is for potential change. So how do we understand if there's motivation for potential change? And one of the questions that I like to ask relatively early in the sales conversation, if I did an outbound call and I set the meeting, I might say something like, you know, hey, Jessica, I know I reached out to you. You agreed to take this meeting. What was it about what I said that prompted you to jump on this call? You could have said no easily. And they might say, well, you told me to take the call. You asked me. And I said, yeah, but you could have not. You know, I kind of go it again. You asked me, like, I'm sure you could have just deleted it. You probably get cold calls all the time. What was going on? What's going on at your company that prompted you to want to get on this call? Or if it's an inbound lead, hey, noticed you reached out to us. What's happening at your company that prompted you to contact us at this time?
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree.
And that's a nice way to frame it. And then to your point too, we want to understand where are they now and where they want to get to. So a question you might want to ask is, tell me where you are now with regards to why you're asking about this now, and what does better look like?
Mm-hmm.
And at least those.
And when do you want, like, how quick do you need to get to better?
Yes. Is this something you're looking to change now? Is another great, if we're talking about just four questions, if we want to make this very simple, mm-hmm. want to get it down to four. If you're just going to do four questions, like Passover, I know you're not Jewish, but a little Jew humor for my Jewish friends out there. So four questions, you know, what prompted you to take the call? Where are you now? Where do you want to go? And if you're selling something that you can quantify, what's the sort of value of that difference, that delta? What obstacles have you bumped into? And is this a change? Is this something you are looking to change now? Just by asking those four or five questions, you can understand if there's even a need that they're bought into out of the gate, which could stop the chasing, because sometimes the answer might be no, nothing.
I always say, this is like my catchphrase of the year, my next favorite word after yes is no.
That's right.
Like, I'm so down with a no. It's so nice to hear no.
You probably see this all the time. I know I have seen this. In my opinion, the salespeople I work with spend more time chasing than selling.
It's not even chasing, it's like dreaming.
Dreaming, right. And so some of these questions can be helpful. Now, let's give another tactic. How do we know if the person's bought in and they want to talk to us? One of the things that a lot of reps do is they'll use this assumptive close at the end. Do you want to meet next Tuesday or Wednesday? Because my boss told me I have to schedule a next meeting. Mm-hmm. And that's always felt weird to me, because sometimes you get a false yes. People will agree to it because the salesperson's got this charisma and they want to just get off the phone and they're saying yes. But then oftentimes the meetings don't stick. So, and I'd love to get your perspective on this. One of the questions that I really like at the end is a version of this. So Jess, where, if anywhere, would you like to go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll hear when you ask that question is the truth. Now, I just had a disco call before this podcast, and the VP of sales said, I'd like to talk about it internally with my team. Now, this is an interesting one. I'd love to get your perspective on this. One of two things is going on. Either he doesn't feel safe with me, and he's just saying that to get off the phone and is really not interested.
Yeah.
Or in fact, he's really wants to process all the things that I said to him. And so this, I'd love to get your perspective on this. What I said on the call was something that it's called radical honesty, right? And I said, you know, John, typically when people say they want to discuss it offline, it's just a nice way of saying no. Is that kind of what you're thinking? Now think about that.
I'm curious what he said. I'm invested now.
Think about that for a second. Either a couple things are going to happen, right? Because I really want to get a sense, right? Either he's going to say, no. I'm going to hear I'm listening for the energy. No. Like if that goes up, I really want to discuss it internally and da 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 da. Then to me, it's real. And then I might say, hey, would it make sense if we schedule the follow-up, you know, once you've had a chance to digest it? Again, making it so that he has the freedom to choose. And if he says something like, if the energy's low, he might say, you know what, you're right. This isn't really something, or the pricing is really too high, and either way I get to the truth. And so that's another tactic. I know we're talking about persistence, but what we're talking about here is something so much more important, which is a preventative measure so you don't get the headache.
Yeah. I think too, the reason you're chasing is because you don't know. There's just a giant question mark. And I think reps tend to feel safer with a quantity of question marks because they're looking at a pipeline and they're imagining that it's worth something, right? Versus what's a lot scarier is a smaller pipeline, even if it's more qualified and real. And I think that's a typical new rep mistake, and it just comes from you personally understanding the value of your pipeline. I also think what I like that you did is I'm a big believer that buyers don't know how to buy. I'm a big believer that it's a very uncomfortable process for them. And, you know, 80% of what we in sales do is help them through it. And I really like that you said, this is what I do. I know how this goes. I even sometimes go the next step further and I say, that's great. Let me tell you how this is going to go from here. In 2 weeks, a task is going to pop up on my calendar and I'm going to email you. Chasing you for time, like, cut me off now. Like, let's really make this, like, let's make an honest interaction for both of us. Just cut me off now.
I love that because, see, the reason I like that, actually your approach even better, is it diffuses it with a little bit of humor, right? And vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can bring those things into the sales process, you might get a chuckle and people will open up if you give them permission to say no.
And sellers are always a little bit afraid to be transparent about the fact that they're selling. You're selling. The person on the other end knows it. They know your end game is a yes. You know it. You're asking questions that drive towards that yes. I think every so often it's just so nice to just cut to the chase.
Totally.
And say what the intention of the interaction is. It creates this really human moment, and frankly, it's going to create trust. No one's hiding behind anything. No one's like trying to spin up a situation in which what's happening here isn't happening. You're creating trust.
Yes. So we're talking about prevention. Now, let's say we did all these things and the prospect, they scheduled the meeting, they canceled it, and now we are at the stage where we have to get some closure with regards to follow-up emails or communications. Jess, what's your approach on follow-up communications when people do go dark?
So I think it's like a progression. Again, I like to assume best intent. I like to assume that this person had back-to-back meetings and was like, I'm going to take this meeting or I'm going to eat for the first time today. I'm going to make that choice right now. And so just saying, and all, you know, very candidly, hey, I totally get things come up. I would like to reschedule the call. Are we agreed here? Restating the agenda and just seeing what you get. And I think it sounds basic, but it's just giving an opportunity for them to re-engage and show that they're interested. If you don't get anything back,
that... Do you follow up like 7 more times, or what do you do after that? Do you keep going, or...
I don't think emails work beyond that. You've said what you had to say. You offered a suggestion for next steps, and no one bit. right? And I think now it's, you got to catch them live, and you there has to be some element of social pressure to get to the truth that you're only going to find in a phone call.
Okay, so let me give you my playbook on this and see what you think. So I do try to use the phone first. And if I do catch the prospect, I come in it with a sort of, I just want to apologize. And then I just pause. Well, what happened, Josh? What's wrong? Hey, last time we were on the call, you expressed interest in doing this thing better. And it's somewhere along the line, I must've dropped the ball or confused me with my stupid emails. And I'm not calling to move the deal forward at all. Just wanted to apologize. Yeah. And, you know, if you're open to providing feedback, you know, that'd be awesome too. And so what I'm doing here is I'm diffusing the pressure by apologizing for something that I maybe did. And so let's say I didn't catch them. I might send an email like that that's similar. And then what I do is something I think a little bit different. And I just started doing this about 3 months ago. You could actually see a LinkedIn post that I wrote about it. But what I'll do is I'll send a book. They are tier one clients, right? So my small list. I'll send a book. So I'm prospecting VPs of sales. I might send a book like, you know, Chris Voss's book, you know, on negotiation, which is awesome, by the way, if you haven't read it. And I might say, hey, thought you'd enjoy this book. Hopefully it'll help you guys close more deals in Q4. Love Josh, the persistent salesperson. Something like that, like a fun little message. And I'll send that through Amazon, and I'll spend the extra $4 and get it wrapped with my little note. And at least then you could part with dignity. You've left something that's maybe valuable. You've left them with a good taste in their mouth, rather than getting the response that we heard in part one, which is, you're effing bothering me.
I don't know if that's closure enough for me.
Okay, go ahead.
Like, I think I might be a little thirstier for the no.
You want it definitive. But if they don't say anything, with regards to, so when I give this book, my mindset is, I'm giving the book without expecting anything in the back. To me, it's closure, because if there was some interest there, the book would have prompted them to say something, because there's like this reciprocity thing going on. The book.
I don't know. I'm a lazy individual. I just think I would probably like throw the book on my desk, like be internally grateful and move on.
And then in which case there's probably no opportunity potentially. So is your position, you keep going until you get the no? Because I know Stelly over at close.io is of that mindset. He's like, how many times do you follow up? And he says, his perspective is, I go until I get a response.
So I don't know. Like, I don't think you put them, like, there's some people who are like, I put them in like a no response cadence, and I just like keep going until I've beaten them up enough that they're screaming stop. Like, I don't know if that's going to be like my take. I don't think it creates the best experience. I think it's more of the first mindset that we talked about, where it's like, you know, right? I like to, because remember, we've earned some interaction at this point, right? We're not strangers. And I've spent some time, I've put some level of commitment and energy into the interaction. And I guess that's the difference between phase one prospecting and phase two. I have a baseline relationship with this person. I'm a big believer in like a 5-minute planner invitation. Like,
what is that? What is that?
So I call them planner darts. Some people are going to love them and some people are going to hate them. I just say a quick 5 to close the loop. I'm not asking for half an hour and I'm not asking for an hour. I'm assuming the answer is no, but it's just, there's no social pressure. It's like, show up and tell me no, but let's close the loop. Like, and let's better understand where we go from here together.
Isn't there social pressure though in that 5 minutes? Like, isn't the prospect going to be afraid you're going to try to get them going down a path?
So I like templates that are like, hey, I'm taking my sales hat off. That's not the purpose of this time. I want to understand why we're pausing or why we didn't resonate, because it's helpful information for me. And I want to understand how we engage or don't engage going forward. How you know, I think it's like, how do we make sure that you don't get annoying emails going forward? Because if it's like your product is missing some giant functionality that we need, we're never going to be in a good place to win your business until that's different.
Totally get it.
And the focus is on us as a sales organization to be smart enough to like file you away, and come back when we have that functionality.
Good stuff. So we talked about a couple things today, and I think one of the big takeaways is this idea of prevention and the questions we talked about at the beginning, and ending every conversation with, where would you like to go from here? What next step, if any, would you like to take? Would it make sense if we carved out some more time to loop in IT where you're testing? And if you're not getting the buy-in and the prospect isn't open to scheduling some more time, it's a bit of a red flag. And can start the chase, Jess, right?
Yeah, and I think too, you can't have prevention without vulnerability.
Yes.
And you just have to know that no is part of the job. I think there's reps who are so afraid of the no, they'll do anything to not put themselves in a position to hear it. And so you're not hearing the truth because you're not open to the truth.
And that starts with intent, right? We talked about, to wrap things up. If your intent, if you're bringing that sales energy, you're going to sound like the mall kiosk person that wants to rub sea salt lotion on your hand.
I do it every time. By the way, I will do it every time. Never buy it, but I will do it every time.
Jess, thank you so much for your perspective, and I'm glad you get free lotion at the mall.
You got it.